Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast on the Westwood One Podcast Network. Everyone's listening. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Yeah.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here. I'm like, Norris, what was that?
Just a bleh.
It was really just me clearing my throat.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
We've challenged our audience to leave us like 60 reviews. Reviews in a year. Now, we haven't gotten any new reviews in last week and the week before that.
So we need the reviews.
Exactly. So make sure you leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show by searching Checkpoint Radio on Apple Podcasts. Drop us a quick review and let us know what you think. But we do have a review that we haven't read yet.
Yeah, this is from Jern96. He says, "This strange bunch of guys bring just the right amount of enthusiasm, information, overall good fun together to make a great show. They represent the regular person in the market, and their longtime friendship together makes their chemistry perfect. I have and always will recommend them to anybody and everybody with the slightest interest in gaming or esports. If you end up liking them as much as me, would recommend their other shows, Limit Break Radio or the Let's Be Real podcast, from your lifetime listener, Jeremy H. 96.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy H., for that review. If you would like to add your opinions, and we might even read them here on the show, then again, search Checkpoint Radio on Apple Podcasts and leave us a little bit of a review. Now, for a while, we've actually been trying this new reversed format where we talk about the podcast topic first.
But wait,
it's been working out.
Before you start, I just got to read this.
Okay.
Oh,
all right.
Allegedly, well, not allegedly, because it's on video. Mark Cuban has stated League of Legends is more of a sport than golf.
Well, first of all, he's correct.
I mean, yes, but at the same time, though, like, I mean, that is a pretty big reversal, because Mark Cuban was one of those that was early on saying that he would never invest in esports.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know,
still hasn't, though.
I've been actually hearing a lot of comparisons, too, between golf and PUBG. Talking about how do you present PUBG.
Okay.
You take the format of golf, of moving around, because you have different players on the course at different times. Like, actually...
That is a good way to do that. Like golf.
That's actually a pretty good
point. You bounce around, you try to get some threads, some drama.
But you do have to talk a little bit more enthusiastically than they do in golf.
Yes.
A little bit.
No one's going to settle for it.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
By the way, this week also, we had another party outside.
They're rocking.
Yeah, if anyone was hearing Bruno Mars coming through, it sounded like it was, you know, four flights of stairs down and a complex over. That's what that was. Hopefully you didn't hear it, but just so if anyone was like, what was that weird noise that I heard on the radio show?
It's probably that. It was probably some old people doing the Cupid Shuffle.
Nate is very nervous about that sort of thing. Personally, I think we're probably fine. I think it was okay.
Nervous is not the right word. Furious is the right word.
Ah.
I mean, you know, we schedule this show on a Wednesday night.
For a reason.
Yeah, so that it's like you would think that's the quantifiably like most dead time in terms of like when people are doing stuff.
There's no chance construction will be going on. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a Wednesday. Who parties on a Wednesday?
Baby boomers.
Baby boomers, apparently. Stupid baby boomers. Anyway.
Damn it.
So let's talk about some cartoons.
I bet you Kevin parties on Wednesdays.
I bet you he does. No, actually, you know what? No. Kevin's a Gen Xer, which means that he has a job to get to, which means that he's probably not going to be partying on a Thursday. But let him retire in about 15 years. And then
he can party on Wednesdays.
Well, but think about like what did Gen Xers do before they got jobs that they had
drugs.
To be at?
They wore a lot of puka shells.
Yeah.
We're gonna have the Foo Fighters. Doing a geriatric
frosted tips
tour, the geriatric home tour.
Could you imagine Kevin with frosted tips?
Here's the problem: is
necklace.
Yes,
yeah,
I actually can picture Kevin with frosted tips.
Very much so.
Not a good sight.
So last week, the internet erupted, and you would have thought that somebody had killed the internet's mother the way that people were reacting to the announcement that Cartoon Network was putting out a revamped version of the Thundercats called Thundercats Roar.
Yes.
And I was watching fully grown men
losing their minds,
starting like flame wars over Twitter about this.
I have a quick question because I know that somebody probably wants to answer it. Were they all white? Just out of curiosity.
I mean, I wasn't paying attention, but I'm gonna.
I bet they were.
I'm gonna Robbie. I'm gonna guess. Yeah.
Robbie.
Yeah,
yeah, they were.
I was like, Thundercats, okay. Probably.
They were.
Yeah, those are our
they
people.
Were. I mean, but they, which could
have been Voltron.
I mean,
yeah, we'd been definitely in on Voltron.
But Voltron got a reboot on Netflix, and it was fairly loyal to the source material. Mm-hmm. And that's what seems to be the source of the conflict.
Yes.
Is that it is not the muscle-bound furry porn that the 80s version was.
It's not the 80s, which I get it. They're trying to do something different. They're trying to take a franchise, breathe some new life in it, get a different perspective on it, all that type of good stuff.
Right.
But. What I will say is that they're definitely... is a certain way that Thundercats should be presented simply because...
Is it a pseudo-anime style?
No, it's not. It's not even really about the animation style so much. It's not really about the animation style so much. But Thundercats is like a lighthearted to serious cartoon. It's not necessarily like, the regular show, for instance.
Right, right.
Where it's completely episodic, nothing has anything to do with anything.
But I mean, I think you could say largely the same thing about Teen Titans, right?
That was going to be my comparison.
Teen Titans was a fairly serious show. It had moments of levity, but...
Yep, but it was a very serious program overall.
It was, and it had a lot of its roots in sort of the Batman the Animated series.
Definitely.
You know, a lot of the same people who worked on that series ended up working on Teen Titans.
Young Justice.
It took a distinctive... influence from anime because that the anime invasion was happening at the time. But did you know that that series fucking exists, Norris? It was made in 2011 by Warner Brothers, the reboot of Thundercats that was loyal to the source material.
No, it sure did. It came out in 11, and I watched it.
And nobody watched it.
No,
You didn't watch it. Nobody.
It.
Well, then your ratings weren't being counted by Nielsen because they weren't able to secure a second season on that. Because,
no, they didn't.
And I quoteth the creator of the series, nobody fucking watched it.
Yeah. I saw one episode.
Exactly.
Then you never watched it again.
You and everyone else, they saw one episode and never came back.
That's because they took it too serious. It's really hard to recapture that specific tone. That's number one.
Then don't.
That's number one. It's really hard to capture that specific tone of the 80s. That paradigm of cartoon making don't exist no more.
Well, it needs a lot more cocaine.
That's number
one.
That's
the biggest problem.
It's cocaine. Number two is that where the world was in terms of how it consumed media, that paradigm does not exist anymore.
Yep. I loved the original animation style of Thundercats. I was not a big Thundercats fan.
No, me neither.
Even as a kid, I would look at it and go like, that's really well drawn. Holy crap.
But it was the same style that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was in.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
You might remember it being that. Having watched Turtles recently.
It was. No, I watched both of them recently.
Oh, God. I'll tell you what.
They're, for most intents and purposes, they are almost the same.
Yeah, okay. I just remember scenes of all the Turtles being the same character model.
Yeah.
And they just drew Raphael four times and said, there's the Turtles. That happened way too often in that show. Anyway, not the point. My point that I'm trying to get to is, unlike then, it is more frowned upon now to pay an animation studio in Korea $5 a year to draw your show. It is expensive as hell to do that old classic artwork in the modern era.
That's
now,
fair.
I look at Thundercats Roar, and I fucking hate that art style. I think it's lazy, I think it's boring, and it's just unpleasant to look at. But guess what? It isn't made for me.
Yeah.
I'm 28 and I don't watch very many cartoons. They don't give a fuck what I think.
That's part of it. But I already see the chat room starting to talk about Teen Titans Go and
I like Teen Titans
and Bandy back that back and forth. Guess what? I hate to break it to you guys that are sitting here going, it's insulting and disrespectful to the source material.
No, Teen Titans Go is the shit.
Guess what? Teen Titans Go is a legitimately funny show.
It's hilarious.
And your nostalgia is getting in the way of you enjoying something that is actually well written, really funny, and well performed.
Yeah. And I'll say to you guys, because I'm going to agree with you on the fact that, and Joe, I don't know if you feel the same way about Teen Titans Go, but I also don't like the visually, the way that Thundercats Roar looks.
That's why I can't watch Steven Universe, despite it supposedly being a great show.
No, no, you're right. That's right. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But I'm going to say, because I share a similar sentiment to you, Teen Titans Go. That is a hilarious-ass show.
Absolutely.
Aesthetically, I don't like it.
I hate it.
But it doesn't stop it from being good.
Exactly. And that's kind of my point at the end of the day. If Thundercats Roar is written as well as something like Teen Titans, it's going to be fine. Mm. The target audience is going to enjoy it. Most people, again, are going to be able to enjoy it just fine. It's these purists that are holding the source material too close to their heart for nostalgia purposes that are really going to shit on it. Now, the only way that it goes really bad for them is if they try to do what the Powerpuff Girls reboot did and just throw terrible memes that they don't even have context for at the audience, that everyone's just going to go, you don't even know what you're fucking talking about.
But that's what I think it's going to be.
We don't have any evidence.
You have no evidence
of that.
Complete speculation.
That's what everyone thought Teen Titans was even three seasons into the fucking show. We have people in the fucking chat room right now that are doing the same goddamn thing.
This and what everyone's falling victim here to is that old adage, don't judge a book by its cover.
Yes.
I got news for you guys. If you were to put a picture of yourself in this chat right now and we were to judge you based on that, you'd all be out of here.
Yeah. Teen Titans Go. So, I mean, like anyone else, I wanted the next season of Teen Titans. It left on a brutal cliffhanger. And everyone wanted to know what happened next because it was a well-written show.
Sure.
It was well-acted.
I will give you that.
The themes were great and powerful. And what we got, and that's the problem, is what we got instead.
No.
We got a very lighthearted show that was very different and going towards a different market.
But it's not for the people who grew up watching Teen Titans. It's for a new generation to grow up with.
I get that. But at the same time, the people who wanted that are still going to begrudge that.
Well,
it's hard not to.
No.
There's a difference.
You're 40 fucking years old now. Cartoons are not for you.
No, exactly. There's a difference between, hey, that looks like it's not for me. Hey, it doesn't look like it's going to be up my alley. But to get online and lambast it, as if literally your childhood has been crushed.
To make the logical jump that Robbie makes with the Final Fantasy VII remake, where the virtue of the fact that this fucking exists ruins my context on the original product, is ludicrous.
Yeah, I hate that
for
concept.
A fucking cartoon.
What are you talking
up.
About? You hate it, Joe. You say the same thing about 8. You're like, oh,
exactly.
If they remake 8,
it's going to be awful. We all have that.
Yeah, there's things that you love as a child
that you
recognize that it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But you can't help it.
No,
when you
see,
grew up and loved something.
But to a certain extent, I'm the exact opposite. If they could remake 6 today and put it in what it looks like now, I would go for it. I really would. And that's my favorite game. I love that game. I would rather them try and fuck it up than, because they can't ruin my memory of the original. That's the problem. Now everybody's conflating these two memories.
Yeah.
No, it is a separate product. Just like the Final Fantasy remake will be a separate product.
Right.
It's not even being released in the same way 7 was released. It'll be episodic. So you won't even consume it the same way you consumed 7.
It's true.
So you will have this separate memory no matter what. And that will never change. For me, Michael Keaton is Batman. Period. That's just how it is. I don't begrudge Christian Bale for his rendition of Batman.
Kevin Conroy is Batman.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I will agree with that.
Real talk.
Batman for you.
Batman for me is Michael Keaton.
Totally.
Batman is Adam West and will always be Adam West.
It's Michael Keaton with Kevin Conroy's voice.
Which would be weird.
It's really weird.
But it's so weird. In my head canon, it works.
That's so weird.
In my head. But meanwhile, it's Batman the Animated Series, not like the dopest.
It's the best cartoon that's ever been made.
It is not.
Even today. Yep.
It is one of the dopest things ever made.
Went back and watched a few episodes like within the past 2 months, like the very first one, and I'm like, this cartoon is still badass.
How does it still? And because it holds up, because even when it was made, it looked like it had been made 70 years ago.
That's true.
It was meant to look like noir, it does.
That was the single most important art direction decision they made with that cartoon.
Using black construction paper was their smartest idea.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. But I mean, you could tell that they had watched just dozens of Max Fleischer cartoons and things like that to really kind of understand the aesthetic that a series like the Superman animated series, which up until that point had been the most successful superhero animated cartoon, what they could bring to the table and some of the homages that they could call back to that.
Totally.
And that's totally what that entire series is steeped in.
It's weird when you think about it, because everything superhero that comes out is just, especially like the 90s to the early 2000s, is great. From the original Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, when that followed up,
we'll just say WB.
Pretty much, yeah, WB.
Yeah,
Batman, the Superman, stuff, yeah. Teen Titans, Young Justice,
yeah,
they're all incredible.
They're all very well done. All very well done.
And when I look at like a series like, you know, Thundercats Roar, I think you might have the right of it, Norris, in that you just have to, it's something completely different.
You just got separated.
And the thing is, you know, I'm much more willing to give art styles that I don't like a shot after being able to legitimately get into Steven Universe. I don't like Steven Universe. I don't like all of the fucking callbacks that they do to anime. I don't like how cutesy it is. But there's a real emotional heart at the center of that show that if you spend enough time with it, you're going to get hit in the feels by something. And it's really that's sort of the gem of the show.
That happened to me
trying to make a pun.
That was a terrible pun.
That happened to me with one other show that I first watched it and hated the art style, but eventually I made an emotional connection with the show and really loved it. And it was Ed, Edd n Eddy.
Yes.
Hated that art style when it came out.
Actually,
yes.
Really,
I did not watch it for the first maybe year it was on TV because I was like, I don't want to look at this.
I think there was an age thing in there too, because I think, as I remember the day that Ed, Edd n Eddy released, the first day that it premiered on air, I even remember my mom was making like some kind of rice dish. Like, that's how clearly I remember it, because I remember it was the first cartoon that I saw and I was like, this is stupid. It's not about anything. What was the point of this? It's
I loved these kids
that lived in a cul-de-sac. It wasn't until I hit, God, it must have been like seventh or eighth grade, that it was the sideways jokes or the weird references that Big Ed would make, and I gravitated to that.
And Big Ed, especially in that, and that makes me think of the side jokes when you mention that.
Mm-hmm.
I think of when I started watching Freakazoid.
Yes.
Because I liked Animaniacs.
Sure.
I didn't love Animaniacs.
Right.
I liked Pinky and the Brain. I didn't love Pinky and the Brain, but I loved Freakazoid. The moment I saw it, I loved it. It was so weird and random, and it was literally like they said, like, we're gonna have a superhero who doesn't do anything, who never saves the day, and all of his little like side character cartoons are even more useless than he is, like Huntsman.
The Huntsman
in two seasons of that show never stops a single criminal. In fact,
he makes it worse.
No, he doesn't even make it worse. And every time he shows up, he gets to the chief's office and something to the effect of, sorry man, some dumb rookie was messing with the horn of urgency. It's false alarm.
Don the luck, Don.
Yeah, exactly. And he just gets mad because there's this huge downturn in crime, and he doesn't get to do anything. He's bored. I love that shit. Even as a kid, I loved that shit, where I was just like, this is the opposite of every other cartoon I watch.
One of the things that I feel like I've noticed when I see my nieces and nephews watching different cartoons, and when I see something like Teen Titans Turn to Teen Titans Go, and with Thundercats Roar, is I look back and, you know, when we were growing up, we had, you know, stuff like Ed, Edd n Eddy, and then we had stuff like, you know, the X-Men cartoon and Batman, and I feel like there was a pretty even distribution of cartoons that were silly and fun, and cartoons that didn't treat you like a kid.
That's true.
And I feel like nowadays everything that I see are treating kids like kids.
It's Peter Pan,
which there isn't necessarily anything wrong
but that's Peter Pan, because you got to think, so many people who are older than cartoon aged are consuming these cartoons
yes.
now, that there's a certain Steven Universe does those callbacks because they know older people
right,
are watching
right.
Steven
yeah.
Universe.
I mean, you always, I think, even when you have stuff that's very, very, you know, Teen Titan Go-ish or ask or whatever, you can still see the adult stuff
well,
in it.
Yeah, well, think about when you watched Batman and you saw the episode with the little girl who was a child star and
yes.
she never grew up like she does.
Okay,
she doesn't
yeah.
That is a genuinely heartbreaking episode.
Yes.
That is, and only more so as you get older and you start to really be able to contextualize it all and
right,
understand
right,
what
right.
it means. As a kid, that's a C episode.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's not like we don't have animation that sort of serves in the middle, right? Like, we've got animation that's definitely for kids. I would say that, you know, Steven Universe, Adventure Time,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of the Nickelodeon animation, SpongeBob, falls into that. And it's not like as adults we don't get anything out of it or we don't find it entertaining.
You can still chuckle.
I love Adventure Time. I will always love Adventure Time. It's a really smart show. But it's not like we don't have something that when a kid turns 12, 13, 14, 15 for them to watch. I mean, Adult Swim is perfect for that. That's not quite adult oriented. Like, I would say, like truly adult oriented, animation would be something like Grave of Fireflies, something that's so serious.
Why'd you have to remind me of that?
You know what I mean? Something that's so serious and even, you know, like transcends the medium. I think that is much more aimed for adults. But, you know, if you're coming off of watching, you know, Adventure Time and We Bare Bears and Teen Titans Go, I think that you've got a pretty reasonable and soft landing with something like Bob's Burgers than you do, you know, either diving straight into the avant-garde world of Adult Swim or, the incredibly intense violence of, like, some of the, you know,
Akira or something crazy.
But that's what I was about to say, and Joe, you just brought it up, is that for a lot of people, and I know specifically for a lot of, like, black kids growing up, when we grew up, like, there was a divergence in you either went from cartoons and you started like an anime, or you started like in basically everything else, the WB, you know, cartoons and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
And the thing is that in terms of 90s cartoons and stuff like that, Toonami was so huge.
It was transformative.
Because that was, you know, Dragon Ball and
Dragon
Sailor Moon and stuff.
Just putting
those things, already. But Dragon Ball had already been introduced before Toonami.
But Dragon Ball Z, Outlaw Star, Cowboy Bebop was on there for a while.
Thank you.
But it's like all those things began to sort of redefine what cartoons were at the time, and thematically, those WB cartoons borrowed a lot from anime tropes, especially in some of their longer series.
Static Shock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Static Shock steals so much out of anime without even...
I forgot about that show.
And it's a great show.
Didn't Phil Lamar do the voice of the main
character? I think he did.
Because I actually watched a video not that long ago where Phil Lamar was talking about some of his favorite voice roles, and he was saying that the kid from Static Shock was actually his favorite because
Virgil.
it was him when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's so cool.
And that is, I mean, again, that is so much of that is steeped in anime.
Yes.
And 90s anime.
It's like, I remember the first time Robotech/Macross came out on Toonami, and I was just like, what? Fighter jets that turn into robots? What, this was made in 1978. What the hell?
Where have I been?
Yeah, and I'm watching it and I'm like, holy shit. And I start making the connections This is taken from it.
Or how about the first time you saw Ghost in the Shell? And I don't know if you saw The Matrix first or not. I did. I saw The Matrix
before. I saw The Matrix second.
I saw
Ghost in the Shell first.
I saw The Matrix before I saw Ghost in the Shell. And it was like, it was like eye-opening to see how much was being borrowed thematically from Ghost in the Shell and applied to The Matrix.
I saw The Matrix for the first time because my father came downstairs like, have you ever heard of The Matrix? And I said no. And he's like, it would be right up your alley. And I'm like, what makes you say that? He's like, well, you like computers a lot, So I think you'd be into this. I'm like,
dude,
that does not tell me anything.
We got We got a free newspaper pass to go see it the day before it came out at Star Southfield.
Wow.
They were like, you want to go see this movie called The Matrix? And I was like, yeah, sure. Keanu Reeves is in it. Some shit going to blow up. And I went, and I remember watching it going like, this is anime with real people.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yes.
The first time,
I remember two distinct thoughts of, this is like when I watched Ghost in the Shell.
Yep.
And the other thought of, wow, cinema's reached its peak. It can't get any better now. How can you do better than this? That just slowed down and flipped over into slow motion. Holy crap.
That was a brief period of time for a split second. I'm like, movies can't get better, bro.
This is it.
That the scene in the elevator shootout
in the lobby,
I was like, who could?
There will never be a better moment.
Even do this.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So, and then The Matrix 2 came out, and we were all like, yeah, we were right. Yeah. It couldn't get any better than The Matrix. We called it. All right.
No, I do. I mean, the experience of seeing The Matrix for the first time was fairly mind-blowing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I think unless you had been exposed to specifically like cyberpunk literature or you know, the very few things of cyberpunk that existed at that point in the world, that this was an entirely new concept that you were being opened up to.
Your context for if you were like me for like futuristic stuff at that point was
Blade Runner, Terminator 2. Yes.
And Predator.
Terminator 2, Predator. Blade Runner, Star Wars was so fantastical.
The Matrix was like the first movie we were like, this could happen.
But it's like, this was near future. Yes. Like, that was the thing. Yes. Like, there was very few near future outside of Terminator type things.
Correct.
And that's true, that
borrows from anime, and I just think it was like when you see that fork break off, because I think it pretty much still exists.
I don't know that it does.
I think it does. Yeah, I think it does. Outside of certain stuff that's accepted by everybody, like Naruto. Everybody was watching Naruto
But I feel like anime has become so mainstream that it's like, once you kind of reach that point, you know, when you're growing now, if you're a kid, right?
Yeah.
And this is, I'm just guessing, obviously I don't have kids or you know I can't observe children's behavior.
I can, because I work with kids.
But I sort of feel like, you know, like the idea that anime is something that you get into is not necessarily even that valid anymore, because it's just it's so mainstream and so accessible.
Everyone has an anime, even if it's just Spirited Away or a Studio Ghibli film.
No, it is. I'll say
Miyazaki film.
Everybody has a anime.
Yeah.
So it's not so much the divergence. Everybody does have anime that they watch nowadays amongst the youth, but there are still very few kids who are into anime.
Well, but to your point though on the divergence though, at the point where that would normally happen, right, like that's where you know, I see that point is where a lot of people end up putting things that they liked as a kid, cartoons, video games, action figures, they put that thing in a box and they either put it in the attic for a day where they can spend some time with it and they really want to drag it out again, or they throw it in the fire and they kill that part of themselves and they move on. Right. I feel like there is way less of throwing it in the fire. Way more people just
especially in our generation.
Exactly. Yeah. Just kind of box that up, and you know, maybe it's just not the most prominent thing. But I think even a generation younger than us, I don't think they even box that shit up anymore. I think that
just live it forever.
Totally. It's just gonna become a part of their, you know, their cultural tapestry that they end up weaving as they end up aging.
It is more mainstream, but it's just like the divergence I was talking about is that there's specifically a camp of non-anime watchers and anime watchers.
Okay.
And there is some overlap. Of course, there's
everyone's
always
seen Spirited
overlap.
Away. Sure,
Everybody's seen Spirited Away. Everybody used to watch Naruto and Dragon Ball and all that type of stuff. But that gap, to your point, that gap is closing. And by the time Gen Z are, you know, full-grown adults,
might be gone.
They'll be gone.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching Kill Bill for the first time.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, we're not treading any new territory to say that borrowed pretty heavily from anime. It was pretty widely known. Yeah, exactly.
It did.
But the whole first part, and to see anime that I loved, you know, growing up being used in what was a pretty brutal movie. I mean, it's a Tarantino film.
Yeah.
I like that was transformative for me to realize that you can take things that you loved as a childhood and repurpose them and recontextualize them in your modern life. And I mean, it wasn't long after that Limit Break Radio started happening for me. So right. That's kind of a big thing to understand that, you know, things you love as a kid absolutely still serve a purpose in your life.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, how about like an animator or an animation style that you got into as an adult that maybe you weren't even aware of as a kid? For me, Ralph Bakshi. 100%.
Wow, really?
Yes. I was not that into... I mean, I don't think I had ever even seen any of Ralph Bakshi's movies growing up. And, of course, he's the guy who made Fritz the Cat. I mean, this is... Mm-hmm. It's a movie that had a big enough impact on me that I named my cat after the movie.
Right?
He also did the animated version, and this is what I think most people know him from or have been exposed to his work from. He did the first animated version of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
I remember that. Yeah.
Okay.
He also did an excellent movie that kind of got buried because it released in tandem with Star Wars. It released the same weekend as Star Wars.
Aww.
Wizards. Wizards is a beautiful, heartfelt movie that is all hand cell animated and it is just absolutely gorgeous. Now, the other thing that he helped develop was rotoscoping. And if you don't know what rotoscoping is, it's where you actually film a scene and then you go back over it on the actual film itself and you color it in and you kind of animate on the actual film over top of the exposure. Now, why that is significant is because rotoscoping is still used today and is the chief way that you achieve special effects on the level like Avengers. There is still a significant rotoscoping department for any movie that has significant amounts of CGI animation in it. And, you know, when you watch something like Infinity War, I think you've really got to question how much of what I'm seeing is animated. You know, when you've got these big set pieces like being inside of a spaceship going through space.
Fields of Wakanda.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. How exactly do you practically film those things? There's only going to be some scene settings that you're going to be able to do and the rest that you have to do with animation work. And I just wanted to take a moment and acknowledge the work of Ralph Bakshi, not just because he was so incredibly talented, but also because his, you know, the work and the technology that he helped develop to craft his films is still in use today, and not enough people know or recognize that fact. So he's got an amazing collection of movies. They're very weird movies. It's sort of like the anti-Disney, right?
Yeah.
Like if you sort of think of like, you know, Sleeping Beauty and Snow White.
He wasn't the guy who did Secret of Nim, was he? That was someone else, right?
That was a different animation studio. No, great animation studio, but a different animation studio.
I have to say I got into like stop motion stuff as an adult. I didn't really like it as a kid. I thought it looked really weird, but I forgot it was a Wes Anderson movie that he did that was all stop motion. The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yep. And I mean his latest work, Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs is stop motion.
Exactly. Yeah, it's that same sort of aesthetic.
Yeah, and so I looked at it, I was like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah. The one that really impressed me was Coraline.
Coraline and Nightmare Before Christmas, both. I mean,
absolutely.
Like, the amount of time that went into filming those damn movies, I can't even fathom, like, all the claymation work. I love it in Beetlejuice. My God.
Absolutely.
Every time they cut into, like, one of Beetlejuice's effects, it's all stop motion.
Yeah.
Which meant that he sat there with makeup on for a long time.
The whole time.
Really long
if
time.
I mean, a lot of it was just clay models, of course, not actually him, but a lot of it also wasn't because they have to do the transitions between him and the model.
Yeah.
And the girl riding in on the damn sandworm at the end. Like,
oh, yeah.
Those kinds of animation effects are always so incredibly impressive to me. Oh, my God. My film teacher would absolutely murder me. What's his name? The guy, like, did Jason and the Argonauts, very famous stop motion.
Oh, Ray Harryhausen.
Harryhausen. unbelievable, like, for when those films were shot.
You know why?
Holy crap.
Well, especially because, and I actually got a comparative analysis of Ray Harryhausen and other stop motion animators of the time. The thing that made Ray Harryhausen a big deal was the number of frames that he would use, how small and minute the movements would be in between animation keyframes. That was really important, and it was a much more time consuming process, sometimes taking even as much as a year longer than other special effects departments. But at the end of the day, when you look at something like Jason and the Argonauts,
it's incredible.
It still looks incredible.
To call it, I don't like to throw out the term artistic for a movie very frequently. I think that's a cheap term.
Right.
But oh my God, it is an art statement when you watch Jason and the Argonauts today.
100%.
Because of the effort that he put in on that damn method of shooting. Why he chose stop motion, what kind of self-hating person he must have been.
What other options
were
there?
What other option did he have?
I don't know.
You didn't
put a guy in a suit.
You didn't really have another option.
No, because he probably sat back and said, we've tried a guy in a suit, and it looks like
a guy in a suit.
Yeah, I know.
But at this, nevertheless, even if it was his only option, that he committed to it and actually did it.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Absolutely. All right, let's just kind of rapid fire a couple of cartoons that we loved from our youth. Ooh. Cow and Chicken.
Cow and Chicken was amazing. Yeah,
Cow and Chicken.
Two Stupid Dogs.
Red Guys. Two Stupid Dogs. Yes.
I love that cartoon.
Give me Johnny Bravo.
Oh, Johnny Bravo.
Yeah, I watched the hell out of Johnny Bravo.
I was lukewarm on Johnny Bravo, personally.
Yeah, I was on that one.
How about Courage?
Courage the Cowardly Dog. I watched a lot of Courage.
Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy.
Yes!
Hoss Delgado to this day is one of my favorite characters ever.
I loved the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. Although,
I'll be honest, though.
It's latter seasons, like the last two seasons that it had, it really fell off.
I'm going to be for real. I could plug so many hours into just watching Tom and Jerry.
I can watch Tom and Jerry at any moment of any day.
I don't like Tom and Jerry.
I have a tough time nowadays getting into newer shows, whether I like their aesthetic or not. But what I can never get tired of is going back and watching something that I watched when I was very, very young. And now, it's completely different. Tom and Jerry, for example, one of the darkest moments in cartoons is when he gets crushed by a Tom gets crushed by a piano, goes up to heaven, and as he's waiting in line, St. Peter opens a wet bag and a bunch of kittens hop out and go into the pearly gates and just goes, nah, such a shame. And I'm like, someone drowned kitten. That's what they're saying.
Think about what they were able to get away with showing in the 40s and the 50s doing cartoons like that. There's a lot of things on there where oh my God, they would have holy hell rain down on them today if they tried to do that.
Yes. I think the chat room may actually kill me if we don't mention Dexter's Laboratory.
I watched Dexter's Laboratory.
I watched anything Jindy did.
Samurai Jack.
I mean, for about 10 years, he really was sort of the crown jewel of Cartoon Network. Yeah. They really put him on the most important projects. Remember the Clone Wars?
Yeah. His version is incredible.
It is. It's so good. And you know what? I watched all of the CG animated Clone Wars. Yes. You know that they never go over that story again. That story still stands.
It does. Right. Oh my God. Because I saw all of Clone Wars and I think all of Rebels that had been out up to that point before I saw his version of Clone Wars. And I'm like, holy shit.
It was so good.
I gotta say one now, just because now I have the theme song stuck in my head and I'm not gonna be the only one for the rest of the night. Tiny Toons.
Oh God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Tiny Toons was dope.
I played the shit out of the Tiny Toons SNES game.
Oh my God.
So did I.
It was actually a very decent platformer.
It was good. I mean, Nate, I know you did not care for it at all, but I've got to throw Avatar out there. I mean, it was for a whole generation of kids, it was the cartoon, and I loved it.
I came to Avatar late.
I did too. I came to it like 6 months ago.
Yeah, I came to Avatar not that late, but late.
See, my list of stuff that I feel like the it's one of those animes that if you're gonna watch any anime, this is one of the ones you have to watch.
Yeah, so totally.
It's on my list, but I never.
But there's
get
only one
it.
Cartoon that unites everybody, and that's Dragon Ball Z.
I've gone back and forth.
You've seen it.
I've gone back. Oh, absolutely.
No, I'm talking about Robbie.
I've never seen a full episode.
Shut up.
From start to finish, I've never
Are
seen
you
a
kidding
full
me?
No.
How old are you?
Nope. In fact, when we were up at Central, our roommate Matt and our friend Frank actually had gotten like a full like collection, and they got
the Kai collection.
Yep, and they were doing like marathons, and I still did not watch a full episode with them.
One of the greatest shows ever made. My whole opinion of you has changed dramatically. First of all, that is a male rite of passage.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, you lose your man card for not having seen Dragon Ball Z.
I'm gender fluid, and I've seen Dragon Ball Z.
See?
If you guys say so.
Holy crap, Joel's more of a man than you.
Yeah.
I don't like that, no.
I'm sad for you now.
Oh my god, that is...
I mean, like I've gone back and forth on Dragon Ball Z. I grew up, of course, loving Dragon Ball Z. Yeah. After a while, I realized...
Everyone falls off eventually.
Yeah, well, after watching 150 consecutive episodes and you go, oh, this shit's not going anywhere?
Yep. Yes.
Then you kind of fall off of it for a while.
Totally
then
5 years, exactly 5 years pass.
It's weird.
It's real time.
Does it take leap years
into account as well?
It's so weird.
It's 5 years to the day, bizarre. Including leap years, that you're like, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch the Cell Saga. That was a good watch.
You will never know the pain of getting all the way through to where Goku fights the Ginyu Force and then waiting with bated breath for the next day to finally see how that fight between Goku and Raccoon ends. Nope. We just restart the whole thing because we don't have the rights to the rest of those episodes.
Yeah.
Oh God, I remember the old days of Toonami. Yeah, knowing what you were in for, because you knew that even though it started all over, you were going to watch every damn episode until it caught back up again.
Yeah,
I remember hearing it was in like a Shonen Jump magazine, like the earliest era of that, where they were talking. Might have even been whatever predated Shonen Jump. I don't even know.
I don't think it was a Shonen
because
over here.
Yeah, it was whatever
like a new type or something.
We had some kind of like anime magazine that was like it loosely talked about anime.
Right. Yeah,
and they had announced it like, hey, by the way, Toonami's been cleared for the next season of Dragon Ball Z, so you can finally find out what happens. That was an event in my life to find out. Like, oh my god, we're gonna get to see Frieza fight.
Yep.
Oh my god, and we're going to get to see Frieza fight.
Right after that, they said at Media Play, we will have the uncut VHS tapes of the whole Frieza saga.
VHS tapes?
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, but don't worry, we've got another movie coming out to help tide you over. Oh, really? Is it going to suck like all of them do?
Yes.
Is he going to be super depowered and weak?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you guys actually have any like old cartoons left on VHS tapes anywhere?
I still have some
old Dragon Ball Z tapes.
I ditched all of my VHS.
It's not a cartoon, but I have the Green Ranger saga on VHS somewhere.
I think I have that too. I'll do you one better.
At my mom's house.
I have a VHS somewhere in my basement of like four episodes of VR Troopers.
Oh, nice.
Because I was a VR Troopers fan when I was a kid. Me and apparently six other people, because it got canceled on for the first season.
Do you one better? Beetleborgs.
My brother was Beetleborgs, and we do definitely have those DVDs laying around somewhere.
I'll do you one better.
Why is Beetleborgs?
Why is Beetleborgs?
Sorry. You just kind of left me wide open for that. All right, let's check out what's going on this week on the radio show. We started off giving you a preview of what you can expect this summer for esports events, talking about some of our favorites, including EVO, the International, PUBG.
NALCS, PUBG.
Yes, absolutely. It seems like it's going to be a incredible summer for esports, and you know, I would say that this is not necessarily the first summer that esports has really been breaking out into the mainstream, but I think that this is one where the spotlight has never been so bright.
The world's eyes will be on esports, and not just in America, but the Olympic International Committee, you better believe they're going to be watching this summer. Everywhere, and I mean, obviously 126 million bots in China are going to be watching also. So guys, if you're planning out what your presentation is going to look like, maybe this would be the summer to not, you know, go half-ass.
Yeah.
Go
whole-ass this summer.
Whole-ass it.
Go the whole-ass or nothing. I think that...
By the way, those PUBG qualifiers, those start tomorrow.
Really? Oh, that's tomorrow?
That's this weekend.
Oh,
that's happening.
I'm doing tomorrow.
So if you guys want something to watch this weekend.
Yeah.
If you're hearing this on PUBG action. If you're hearing this on the podcast, it's probably happening right now.
That's right.
So finish listening to this.
No.
Don't finish listening to this. Listen to watch PUBG, re-download this and then listen
there
to this.
There you go.
Give us another download.
That's right. And then review the show.
Yes, like, and then review the show.
That's right. We also give you the latest in esports news as well as, well, here comes Fortnite onto the esports scene.
You know, one of the things that I really wanted to mention, we were talking about the Fortnite as like, their sort of esports scene, and where they can exist is the same way that they did that Ninja contest or whatever out at the esports arena in Las Vegas, with them saying that it's all inclusive. You know, when we look at esports, it's always the best of the best of the best.
Yeah.
We would never be able to compete ever. But if
it's true,
if the idea behind Fortnite is that everybody can compete, that
everybody gets
a shot at that prize pool, no matter how ugly I think Fortnite looks, I think that would be amazing.
Here's what I think about that is, yes, I like, because we've said all along that I think PUBG, you know, it lends itself better to an esports viewing experience.
Sure.
NALCS, OWL, they all lend themselves better to an esports viewing experience than Fortnite does. But it kind of sounds like Epic gets that.
Yes.
It kind of sounds like they understand that and say, like, listen, if we try to go head-to-head with the other ones in the same style that they do, we're going to lose. We're not going to win at that. So let's do something a little different.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably pretty welcome in this.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it is, a lot of tournament scenes are pretty copy and paste from other tournament scenes. So it's nice that they're getting kind of creative and trying to think outside the box a little bit. I do worry, just like with PUBG, on the presentation side.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, you know, Fortnite is an incredibly complicated game. The map is incredibly huge. So there's a lot of different factors that a presenter is going to have to balance to be able to present a cogent experience.
Yep.
I just like PUBG did, it's going to take him a couple of times to be able to figure that out.
Totally. But as Robbie pointed out with the Ninja tournament, they did a pretty good job presenting that. And there was room for improvement.
However, they just watched Ninja like 99% of that time.
Here's my problem. Even as excited as I would be for this to happen, I still don't care to watch it. I'll look up what happened, maybe watch a highlight reel, but I have no interest in sitting down and watching people actually play it.
Now, again, I want to reiterate that the $100 million number is what they're investing in the entirety of the prize pools for the entire...
Mm-hmm,
what
for the year.
What we're going to assume is the season of competitive Fortnite. So we're not talking about a single tournament with $100 million on the line. We're talking...
That'd be insane.
It would be.
I'd tune in for that.
Honestly, that may not be the worst idea if they did it that way.
In for that.
But at the same time, they do have resources at their disposal, much like Dota 2 does, sure, to be able to crowdfund some large and impressive pots. So a $100 million investment from the developer in the scene itself, that is something that I don't think can be understated. So I think that Epic is probably making the right move. It's going to be interesting to see how it ends up stacking up or blowing something like PUBG out of the water.
Yeah, and I think it is important to circle back on that, is that this is $100 million that Epic put up. This isn't in partnership with...
Yeah, there's no sponsors.
This is their skin they're putting in the game.
Right, exactly, Epic. Which means that there is more room for more investment in the league. We know that, you know, most developers don't go into this whole hog solo.
Correct.
Even OWL has HP and Omen backing them up as well. So, you know what? I think that there's going to be a lot of room to grow. $100 million, that's a lot of money on the table. And it looks like Epic is really serious about trying to get their foot in the door for this esports thing.
They might pull it off.
Maybe. Well, it remains to be seen, I guess. Joe, we played a brand new game.
Yep.
And I'm kind of curious. I want to get your take on this game because you had prepped it, and I think it went a little bit differently than you thought it was going to go. Did you think we were going to get through all of those questions?
I did not expect us to get through all eight.
I mean, we blew through all of them very quickly.
We're
going to pull the curtain back a little.
Tuck that ego back in.
We are going to pull the curtain back a little bit here for you.
Yes.
The Ocarina of Time, the eighth one, I wrote that mid-segment.
Oh, okay.
I wrote that one mid-segment because I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
They are getting through these way faster than that. I originally wrote five.
Okay.
For the segment.
Wow.
And then I thought, like, they'll get through five. That'll be no problem. I'll bump it up to seven.
I did not think we would get
the
seven.
Dude, we were blowing through those so quickly.
Yeah, really well.
I was.
The next time we do this game, I'll put 10 on there.
I was really concerned. Well, I thought we could have probably discussed them a little bit more in between.
In depth, sure.
Yeah.
Overall, I thought the game was fun. I was pretty proud of my clues. I thought they were pretty good.
I was really impressed with your clues, honestly. Yeah. Had I not known that you made this game yourself, like you could have said I found this game and I've been like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Joe didn't come up with these.
I stole the bit.
Right,
the concept for the game, but I made the clues.
This is the bit
that you can play at any Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right. We also talk about the latest in OWL moving into Stage 4, a big meta shakeup, adding Brigitte in there as well, seeing what the different teams have been reacting to this new meta. It seems like the Boston Uprising have a big uphill struggle.
Yeah, thanks to Kevin, our producer.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Kevin. We have got the curse of the Kevin. Any team that Kevin roots for automatically starts to lose.
He started off
as a Fuel fan and then moved to the Boston Uprising after they had started to win, and now guess what? They're losing. So thanks, Kevin.
I'd like to change my drama pool selection to the Uprising, actually.
Oh, great.
I'd like to point out, too, as of recording this, the Boston Uprising have lost to the Dallas Fuel.
God damn it.
It is poetic.
Boston, what are you doing?
3-0, guys. 3-0.
I bet they were feeling so good coming into Stage 4.
They had to be.
Oh, my God. Because, I mean, yeah, when you go on an undefeated streak like that, I mean, that has a way of really giving you some confidence and some momentum. But, boy, they just seem to be blowing it, don't they?
Yep. Thanks, Kevin.
Oh, God. We also talk about the midseason invitational for League of Legends. And,
yeah, I didn't get to mention
the results out of there.
Joe's wrong again.
Joe is wrong again.
All right, just for the record, Dark Horse does not mean that's my pick. But anyway, I digress. That sounds
like some backpedaling to me.
Fair enough. But I wanted to mention our special shout out to Uzi, who is the AD carry for Royal Never Give Up. Uzi, for I think the past year, I would say, since probably back to around MSI last year, he has always kind of been like the guy where it's always been like, no, he's the next big thing in League of Legends.
He's had a monkey on his back.
He's going to be the best player there is. He's incredible. He's so good. And he's never gotten over the hump. Whether it's been at MSI or at Worlds, they've never been able to get over the hump.
Sure.
Finally, Uzi goes ham and takes Royal over the hump to the win. And it's like, yes, Uzi has arrived. He's here.
That's awesome.
But I can't help but think if SKT's there, and they come up against Royal Never.
SKT didn't even qualify. I don't even think qualified.
I'm saying at their best. I mean, we can't.
Jordan versus LeBron.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We can't not say that them not being there left a void. There's a void. SKT not being there is a void.
Exactly.
Period.
And that's the truth. Like, whoever's like the biggest mid laner now always will have to live in the shadow of like, yeah, but you're not Faker. You know, like Faker was better in his prime than you. Yeah, you're right. There will always be that.
I'm glad that we're at that point with esports already.
That we get to decide that.
Yeah.
Kind of literally, because we actually know who will be the Michael Jordan of esports, and at least in League, that player does exist.
Yeah.
For a 5-year span, there was no question who the best player in the world was.
Right.
It was Faker.
Yeah.
And people, no matter what sport, esport you follow, you do know who Faker is.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to be like on Checkpoint Radio to know who Faker is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We also talk about the latest in gaming news, including the PS5 possibly being at E3 2018.
PS5.
What do you think?
Everyone was very no, and I kind of put some thoughts out there, and everyone was kind of like, well, maybe.
You know,
and that's the problem.
That's the problem.
You're 100% right there, Joe, because, there is a lot of room to...
The door is just open enough.
Can we all agree, then, that if absolutely nothing happens with the PS5 whatsoever, we get to beat up on Joe for, like, trying to get our hopes up?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool.
I'm good with that.
Robbie, I just want to point out, you did not need that good of a justification to get them to agree to that.
That's also true.
Can we just agree that Naked Chicken Chalupa is back and we should beat up on Joe? Yeah, absolutely. We can do that.
Well, but there's a reason, because you would eat the Naked Chicken Chalupa.
I have already eaten the Naked Chicken Chalupa, and I will resume eating it probably in about
20 minutes or so.
Joe, don't do that to yourself.
It's so good.
Don't do that to yourself. But realistically,
write the check, Taco Bell.
Realistically, I don't think that there's much of a chance that we're going to see anything about a PS5 this year. Yeah. I think realistically, we've got the best shot next year.
Yeah, as fun as it is to speculate, and you know, of course, for radio, it's fun to talk about it. But
yes,
if I had, you know, forked my nose in a dark alley, nah, probably next year.
Who's putting a fork to your nose in dark alleys?
Someone who's trying to make me ask or decide whether or not the PS5's happening.
What dark alleys are you hanging out
in? Delvick says, would that count as a hate crime?
I don't think it would.
No, because we're beating them up because of the PS5.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
We also take a look at some of the announcements from last year's E3, from E3 2017, and decide whether or not they ended up living up to the hype.
Because it's always about a 50-50 ratio.
Did we actually pick out like who would have been the champion of
God
E3
of War.
Last
God
year?
Of War.
Yeah.
God of War.
Hands down.
Dragon Ball in
about.
A very, very close set.
That's fair.
Now, and because I don't think any of us actually got hands-on with God of War, so I don't think any of us would have been able to have an informed enough opinion about God of War to be able to make
that
assessment.
But I just think everybody kind of at face value said, well, Dragon Ball FighterZ is beautiful. It's going to be good. It's an Arc Systems
game. But we also got to play it, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, even if you didn't get a hands-on.
You know as well as I do, yes, it looks beautiful. It looks like you're playing the anime, but at the same time, when you play it, it plays so goddamn well.
Yeah. When, Norris, when I played you, when we went out to, what was that place? The Dueling Piano Bar.
Yeah, 526, yeah.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, we played a few matches, and after that, going home, like, I've actually put a little bit of consideration into getting Dragon Ball FighterZ.
He's never watched a full episode, and he's going
to
get Dragon Ball FighterZ.
And he wants to go buy the Dragon Ball of the game.
Go fuck yourself, Robbie. Piece of shit. We also talk about David Price and his
gaming
non-start. Yes, his gaming addiction, as well as some non-named NHL prospect, which I don't know how much I believe that. But, I mean, for the sake of argument, let's just say sure.
And this did make big news because pitchers, a lot is made about the fact that they are paid a lot of money to only play every fifth day.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pitch every fifth day in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And a lot of so when you miss a start, usually it better be for a good reason.
Yeah.
And people don't want to hear they missed it because you were playing video
Fortnite,
games.
Fortnite, right. Yep. And as you said on the show, David Price is getting paid, what, $25 million a year?
I think he's up there as like one of the highest paid.
But that's what I'm saying. You getting paid $25 million a year to go out there and put in maybe 6 2/3 of work. Average, you know, give me six and two thirds innings. I'll consider
David Price. You better give eight.
But you know what this really is. You know what this is. This is all part of the millennial agenda to destroy everything that baby boomers love, including Applebee's, golf,
and sports,
and terrible socks with sandals.
Our esports is coming for your footballs.
That's right.
That's the new canon.
And we're gonna invade in a way that you can't even do anything about. We're gonna just make awesome stuff until your players
but
all end
I don't
up playing
think,
it.
But I don't think we could take credit for baseball. I think 3,000 games a year.
Baseball did it to themselves.
Baseball did it to themselves.
You're not wrong. Not wrong. It's difficult.
But it's totally worth mentioning that esports injuries are a thing.
Yes, absolutely.
They're a serious thing.
Absolutely.
They do happen a lot, and not just carpal tunnel, which is, you know, the go to bottom of the barrel joke for, you know, a gamer, but collapsed lungs. That is a thing that happens in tournaments.
That's terrifying.
Back problems.
Yeah, back problems. Eye problems.
Not
knee
even
flexes.
Talking about eye problems. Anxiety.
Hip problems. I'm starting to develop hip dysplasia.
I deal with lower back pain.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting old. I don't know.
You guys sound
old. You know what I think?
Yeah, because I don't have any
of that problems. Either. No.
Well, here's what it is. It's the fact that we don't have DX Racer chairs in the studio. That's what it is.
You mean DX Racer, the company that exists in Michigan?
That's right.
Creates top quality chairs.
That's
top
right.
100% quality chairs.
That's
and so
right.
If you really want the best gaming experience, I'm kidding.
DX Racer would be the way to go.
Sign the check, DX Racer.
Come on, or just
really,
give us some chairs.
Really wish we could show them off on our stream.
That was about to be the most on point live read. That was a really good
accidental
audition.
Live read, yeah.
That was good.
Let's do it.
Someone's going to hear that and be like, I need to get these guys.
That's right. Somebody send that to DX
really?
Racer.
Do they?
Clip
because
that.
We're already
Lloyd.
Talking about them.
That's right.
Lloyd, clip it.
And then, of course, we wrap up today talking about our social media, asking our social media question, asking you what you need to see out at E3 this year. And let me tell you.
Too many Kingdom Hearts 3?
Let me tell you something. this was incredibly helpful for us because we're in the process of scheduling our interviews right now for E3, and knowing what you guys want to hear about is really valuable for us, because that means that we get to try that much harder to chase those answers down for you.
Literally tonight.
Yes.
I am going home and beginning the outline prep for our E3 episodes.
Woo!
Yep. That's pulling back the curtain. That's what's happening.
Yes, exactly.
So yes, when you guys will get on there and tell us what it is that you care about, because we'd love to just go out there and spend 6 days
just dicking around,
being selfish and only the things that we care about.
Yeah,
we'd absolutely have no problem doing that. I promise you,
we still have a great show.
Yeah,
that's true.
But knowing what you guys actually care about, because Are any of us in this room super excited for Kingdom Hearts 3? Mm-hmm. Not really. But knowing that you all want to hear about it, we're going to go try to find out about it now.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll talk about it.
Exactly. So thank you guys for all of your responses. And if you want to get in on that, make sure that you follow us Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's CheckPT Radio on all of those. That's going to be it for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Guys, thanks so much for hanging out and listening to us talk about cartoons and stuff.
Dumb random crap that we think is entertaining.
That's right. If you enjoy the Checkpoint Radio podcast, remember to leave a review for us over on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get noticed by other similar shows. It also helps us convince Westwood One that we're actually awesome, and
throw more money at us.
We've got competition like Eric Bischoff and
Chris Jericho,
one of my personal broadcasting idols, Opie from Opie and Anthony. It's gonna be really difficult for us to break out and make some noise among these incredibly talented and awesome shows. So if you like the show, you guys got to go, and you got to make your voice heard so that we can tell Westwood One how awesome you think the show is. And you can do that by searching Checkpoint Radio on Apple Podcasts and leaving us a rating and a review. Thanks so much for joining us for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesday, interviews from past episodes, and a whole lot more. Plus, we also just got a blog feature, so you can find all of that over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointradio.com.